I will I'll bring us in, and then we'll talk about the prologue, the prison, and then the sewers, and basically just we'll end with us walking up to Samuel for like covering for this episode.
Mm-hmm.
All right, cool. I will bring us in a second. Get a drink and wet the whistle. Hello, and welcome to the 70% Complete Podcast. It is the show where the topic is the tangent. And we're doing a little bit of both this time. We might be swinging them around, doing them in different orders with the topics and the tangents. But before we get into that, Logan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. Are we gonna peek behind the curtain?
Oh, yeah, of course.
And mentioned that this is the second one today.
Yeah, so,
yeah. Yeah. Getting back in the swing of things.
Yeah. Not knocking them out, trying to see what we can do here. I mean, I guess like if you pull back both curtains, this is technically the episode that we were supposed to record the first time. And then we got carried away.
We knew that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
Like we had 2 hours of cruft to chew through.
Yeah.
Before we got here. So,
and you know, honestly, when you look at what we talked about, I'm kind of glad that we got the doom and the gloom out of the way, because today's topic is uplifting.
None of that going on.
It's positive. It's
bright, airy.
Yep. Doesn't have some slogans that make you feel things. Today, and
I haven't felt anything for years.
Well, that's good. That means you're primed and ready for this one. Today's topic, and kind of the topic of a bunch of future episodes, is I'll go out on a limb and say probably one of my all-time favorite video games. We will be talking about Dishonored. Over the winter break, we have taken some time to think about the show and kind of, you know, as one does, you reflect. And we were talking about the best way to kind of smash up the things that we love, the topics and the tangents, is let's give us a focus and then allow us to go
we'll
off the beaten path. Yeah. No promises on a second one of these coming out, but we'll see what happens with the first one.
Yeah. I mean, if we do it right, we can just record two right now and then.
That's true. Then
so the third one is the real question. Right, I feel like.
Yes. Yes.
If there's three of these, there'll probably be like eight of them.
Yeah. I think that's probably how it goes. So, yeah, I like I said, it is one of my favorite games of all time. I have a deep, deep love for Arcane immersive sims, but I'm very curious what your relationship with this game is. Have you played these before? Like what do you know about this game?
So before playing through the chunk we did for this, I knew whatever was talked about on a giant bomb game of the year discussion 14 years ago.
Interesting.
So I knew it was a choices matter stealth action thing. That's kind of about all I could remember. I probably could have told you more a decade ago. It's been sitting in like the middle of my man I should play that list for at least 14 years, I guess.
Okay.
But that's it. Like it is, I guess we'll get to some of it. It's fashier than I was anticipating as a setting.
It sure is. Yep.
But I was basing that off of nothing. So
okay.
Yeah. No, I'm close to a blank slate.
That is incredible.
Man, from what I remember, I feel like they talked about one of these DLCs just as much as they did the game.
Yes.
That I can remember.
Yeah.
But Bloody Baron? Is that
Does
that mean something?
That's Witcher 3.
Damn. Okay.
Yeah. The Witches of Brigmore, though, is a thing that is incredibly important about Dishonored. And if we do manage to get there, I have not played any of those DLCs. This game came out in that really weird span of time where I was playing a lot of games, but I never had a credit card hooked up to my Xbox, so I just never got any of this stuff. Like, I played Shivering Isles, the expansion for Oblivion, probably like 6 years after it came out, just because I just never had anything hooked up to it. So I will be going in blind to a bunch of that stuff. I know why some of it's important. Never seen it.
Interesting. Okay.
That is fascinating. So
we'll both have
that you,
yeah,
you know nothing about this.
I think this fell into the category of like, man, everyone said this is good and now my brain's going to ignore it.
Ah, yes. Yep. No, I know how that goes. I feel that way about many things.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that works out for me great at least half the time. Like, I never watched Game of Thrones for the same reason.
I think
and
you're
then everyone
good.
Ended up hating.
Yeah, I think you're good.
And it was great. Yeah, I just watched a few retrospectives, and I'm like, all right, cool. Don't need to do that now.
No, you can just watch the cutscene compilation of Game of Thrones, and you're all good.
Yeah, that one paid off. So it's not a completely useless system, but it's not an efficient one either.
Yeah, fair. Okay. That's fine, though. But we'll get you around to it. 14 years later, and I got you playing mm-hmm. one of the best games from one of my favorite, I will go out on a limb and say my favorite developer. Arkane is can do
can
no wrong, I think. Well, yeah, they can also get it. That's true. All right, so I guess like some
I'm already gonna disagree with you because this menu is trash. This title splash screen is garbage and I don't like looking at it.
Okay, but here's the deal. Mm-hmm. some real behind the scenes production stuff. We had talked about doing something like this months ago, right? Like this was the book club idea from at least 6 months ago. And I was building a short list of games that I was like, oh, okay, I think we could dig into some of this stuff. And it is a very short list of games just because I put very unrealistic expectations of what we would end up doing. And how I would want to cover it.
That's never happened before.
Yeah. And Dishonored was one of them. And I downloaded the game and I loaded it up and I was like, I don't know. Like, I want to get into this to remember if there is something in here that is like jumping out at me. It's like, okay, like I feel good about bringing this one to Logan to like do this for. And speaking of that menu screen, I loaded mm-hmm. into the game where it allows you to pick new game missions, load stuff, options, and
I'm
quit.
I'm looking at that screen right now.
Uh-huh. And I immediately...
I took a screenshot out of it.
Good. I opened that screen, and then I immediately went over to quit game and closed it because I was like, well, I've seen all I need to see. If you... I'm sure that you are looking at it. If you look directly above the title, there is a mm-hmm. billboard. Can you tell me what that billboard says? Is.
The boldest measures are the safest.
And you know what that says to me? This is a game that we could talk about.
Yeah. Oh, I agree there. I just think this menu is garbage.
Oh, yeah. I mean, listen, it's a 2012 video
and
game.
And I hate looking at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some real 2012 going on in some of these. And I have to keep that in mind. Where I'm like, man, this is real tropey. And then sometimes I'm like, oh, yeah, this was like mm-hmm. probably... towards the front end of that train.
Yep.
Not the back end of the way I'm viewing it now.
Yeah. And there's definitely stuff in Dishonored 2, I think, that builds on a lot of those tropey things and I think takes it in a little bit better direction. But you are not wrong. There is some stuff that when I loaded in this, like, this is... I remember this game being written incredibly well and having a very good story, and I'm mm-hmm. seeing some stuff here that I'm not so sure about all of a sudden.
Yeah, yeah, which is fine. Like, I'm not too down on it.
Yeah.
I will say this was one of the worst times I've had installing a game.
Really?
In the last good while. Yeah, I got it on GOG, which I try to preference for digital rights reasons.
Sure.
And GOG did not want to hand off to PayPal for me correctly this time around for some reason.
Okay.
So I tried five times, I think, to get it to flip over and would not do it. It would load GOG in the browser and then it would just say, hey man, your cart's empty. I don't know why you're here.
Huh.
So eventually I got it to work a different way. But what I did not realize is that every time I tried to do that, it created a new cart for me
what?
On GOG's backend. So by the time
you bought it nine times,
I had bought Well, I bought the game, and then I had 5 pending transactions for this game. 5 incomplete transactions. And GOG gets real confused when that happens. So I had to manually close all of those one at a time, restart GOG, and then it was fine. Then it showed up in my library.
Wild.
But yeah, that was at the end of a not great day already, because you and I were going to do this a week ago? Week ago?
Yeah.
2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
Week ago. And yeah, after that, I was like, okay, I'm going to go ahead and not play this today.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because I will not be charitable to it. I am not in a cool headspace to encounter a new thing. So yeah, went much better today.
Okay.
I will say, if anyone else is going to play this along with us, you're obviously welcome to do so. I would recommend turning off objective markers right away, because that shit is not useful.
And
they're horrible. They're unneeded and distracting. They really kind of detract from it in my mind.
Yeah. There's, I need to look at some of the options, because I haven't done this. I was running through it kind of speedily, so I'm trying to play ahead of you by one episode, just so I can kind of prepare that you tracks. With what's coming up. So I've been like going through
it. And you've done it.
I have done it. This is true. I know some of the tricks this game is going to pull. But it also means that I need that stuff. But when I was doing the Avowed stuff, I was doing a lot of capture for that video. And a thing that we have touched on a little bit in our Sons of the Forest time, and then with that Avowed video, is I think I'm turning into a person who really just likes no HUD in these video games. Like, there is something to the immersion of, I would just like most of that stuff to go away. And I don't think that Dishonored is the game where I need my health meter to go away, because that's kind of important. But there is a part of me that's just like,
don't get hit.
don't get hit. But there is part of it where it's like, yeah, those objective markers, not helpful, and also are kind of the most weird video game part of this at times, where it's like, oh, I already...
They're pretty gross feeling.
Yeah, like, I already know that the guy that I'm going to, I know his name and where he is. That seems odd.
Yeah, and you gave me, a tool in the game that beeps when I get close to him.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, you put the things in the game specifically to not need this.
Yep, yeah.
And I guess that's the issue I have with more modern games, even, is sometimes you can turn the HUD off, but they have not built levels in a way to facilitate you navigating them without a HUD.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's definitely true.
So I'm interested to see if this is going to bite me in the tail or not. So far, everything we've done has been rather linear,
mm-hmm.
linear enough that it hasn't mattered really at all. But
that is,
we'll see.
Yeah. That's not how, like, part of the reason, I guess, like, to take a step back. So we played through, for this episode, we played through the prologue, the opening section, and then the first-ish level. It's kind of the tutorial space. You go through Coldridge Prison, and then you have a segment in the sewers. And then for today, we ended at the end of the sewers. So this episode and the next episode, which will be... we've played it, so we can kind of talk about it. But the next episode will be the Hound's Pit Pub meeting Admiral Havelock and the rest of the folks at the Hound's Pit, and then through the dream with the Outsider. So both of these two episodes that we have are very linear compared to what this game will end up being afterwards. Dishonored, in general, I wouldn't say is as open and responsive as something like a Hitman, but it is very much, you will have a mission to carry out. Here is a large open space that you can go about it in many different ways, and then you have to get out, basically. So there will be
it feels,
uses for it, I guess.
It feels about as linear to me as like the newer crop of Wolfensteins.
Yes.
I think you played through one or two of those.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you're in a quite large rectangle.
Mm-hmm.
There are a number of paths through it.
Yeah.
But you're going to end up at a junction at some point here.
Generally, yes. And the thing that Dishonored has is as you learned in that Outsider segment we'll talk about next time, there is a amount of verticality to this game that I think a lot of other ones don't. Like, it is pulling a lot from Thief, I guess.
Yeah. It's got some Assassin's Creed vibes, too.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. All right. So.
A little less arcadey.
A little arcadey. Yes, for sure. Let's, I guess, I'll do like a super quick recap. I guess we kind of talked about it there, but let's set the grounds here for what's going on in Dishonored, because I sure did forget about the entire beginning of this game. I knew what happened, but I didn't remember the framing of it, which is will continue to be important as the game goes on. So you play as Corvo Atano, who is the royal bodyguard to Empress Caldwin? Jessamine, sure. Caldwin. Yeah. She isn't super important in this game for reasons we'll get to in a second. You have been, as Corvo, you have been sent to the isles around the city you're in, which is called Dunwall, in order to curry favor with the people around you and try to get information to solve this problem that Dunwall is having called the Rat Plague. You come back empty-handed, and you have to basically tell the Empress that you have come back empty-handed. The moment after you do that, the Empress is murdered, and her daughter, Emily, is abducted by the murderers. You are framed by the royal spymaster, Hiram Burrows, and the High Overseer. They come back and they're like, hey, wait a minute, who did this? How dare you? And then 6 months later, you wake up in prison, tortured on the eve of your execution, I guess, and they're trying to get a confession from you. You then escape because you are given a key from quote-unquote friends. You escape the prison. You then escape into the sewers. Some stuff happens in the sewers. You get your cool sword that's just one of those tube lightsabers that you got as a kid, but it can kill people, and a little hand crossbow, and then you work your way through the sewers and leave. That, I think that's basically what we covered, right?
Yeah.
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 Okay. So where do you want to start? Do you want to start with the beginning, with some of the characters we meet? What do you got?
I mean, the beginning is a pretty good place to start, I suppose.
Okay.
I guess I'll just give you, here's a couple of my first notes that I jotted down while playing.
Mm-hmm.
And this was after like, seconds of encountering these characters.
Okay.
Anton Sokolov, I wrote Da Vinci ?
Yep.
Because we have a science guy painting.
Yep.
And then my next note is dude talking to Empress is the bad guy.
Yep.
Which was Spymaster Burrows, who immediately became the bad guy.
Yep.
So there's not there. If you've encountered media, there are some predictable moments to this thing.
There sure is.
But not
is.
In like a super irritating way. It was just kind of like, yeah, I see where this is going, but that's fine.
Yeah. It is very genre tropey. I think at least, let me see, you come up the fancy locks. Your boat is brought into the royal locks, and then it is lifted up. And I think the first thing that one of the people operating the locks says is already talking about how Sokolov is a genius. Like, they're real quick to introduce these three or four main characters that you run into.
Yeah, they sure are. We get a good smash to title sequence.
Yeah.
I get it. I get why you called the game Dishonored.
Yep.
You're explaining that early. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I guess I have a lot of world-building quibbles, I think.
Okay.
I don't know if that's a sort of thing you want to get into, or if you want to just sort of run... I guess we kind of hit all of the plot.
Yeah, we hit most of the stuff.
This is not really a plot-heavy chunk.
No, so, no, it's not.
Let's do a generic world building, I guess, maybe, of this society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
Is real fashy, real 1984 vibes.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of visual allusions to Nazi iconography. A lot of big red banners hanging from the wall with white and black symbols.
Uh-huh.
And yeah.
Even the coat that Burrows is wearing when you meet him first is like screaming SS coat with like the peaked collar and everything.
Yeah.
Are you, you're referencing the stuff that is mostly in Cold Ridge, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I have relatively few notes from the sewer.
Yeah. So I guess maybe a bigger question for you. Are you assuming that that is an indicator of where this society was before you were, before the Empress was killed? Or do you think that this is part of that shift?
I guess that was my assumption, because that shit takes more than 6 months to build with this tech level. Like,
yeah,
the prison we're in is falling apart in ways that take more than 6 months to happen.
Yeah.
So I guess, yeah, that was my main assumption there. And then my main quibble with that is this Empress character makes no sense with this society in any way to me.
Yeah.
She's like real bleeding heart, bent out of shape about civilians dying to the plague during kind of the opening cutscene, which doesn't track with the brutality of everything around it.
Yeah. Yeah.
To me.
I think there's like a, I'm trying not to get my stuff mixed up. I think that there is a random, either like a letter or an audio log that you find somewhere that is basically the spymaster complaining about how he has to basically run the entire country and prepare all of this stuff because Jessamine is too busy hanging out with Corvo and raising her child and caring about the people, that it sounds like she just kind of let him do his thing, just not great.
Right. But like the type of society that this woman is written as the leader of,
yeah,
it shouldn't have a high ranking position called spymaster.
Yeah, I know.
If she's the person in charge, like, that's discongruent as hell to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is fine. They, like, it seemed like they just wanted to have a morally positive ruler to do a murder to real early on.
Yep.
Oh, I guess we should probably talk about the tech level.
Yeah.
Since that's a huge portion of the setting, and we have not mentioned the whale oil of it all.
That's true. Yeah, it's very late 1800s steampunk, but I think the whale oil here is the difference, like the twist on steampunk. Like, to me, steampunk is steam engines and goggles and mm-hmm. smoke everywhere. And this mm-hmm. is much more, here is this vial of glowing blue elixir that powers our society.
Yeah, it's a little incoherent at times.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's electric lights in a way that doesn't necessarily make sense to me the way the rest of things seem to be functioning. I don't know. It's a little, the tech we see is broader than maybe the way the economy is depicted, I guess.
Yes. I want to go back and find this somewhere, but it is a newer thing. So it is, you can start to see that there's a lot of retrofitting of the whale oil stuff. It is much newer to... Oh, yeah. Okay. So it looks like Sokolov is involved in the, like, turning it into a highly refined thing along with the Greaves company. And
yeah. And I guess in what we will have as episode two, there's some talk about that with
mm-hmm.
Sokolov's rival.
Yeah.
Do you want my first two tangents are quite early.
Yes, please.
I'm going to send you the short, dumb one first.
Is this...
Man, I almost just left this call. Where's the button? There's the button. Okay.
All right, I'm ready.
So, wrong keyboard. I have too many computers here.
Oh, God. I'll
send you this screenshot.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a good boiler we're looking at.
Yeah, that's a real nice boiler.
I was looking at this boiler. I don't know if this is a thing you do with video games or really anything. If you need to like make generic art for a thing on a timetable, working off of something specific
mm-hmm.
is a lot easier than just make me a boiler from the early 1800s.
Yes.
Like, that's a hard prompt to fulfill as opposed to make something that looks exactly like whatever I'm showing you right now.
Yep.
So I saw this boiler and I was like, oh, I can read these words on it.
Yeah.
That seems kind of weird. And this thing looks pretty specific. So I went and I found this boiler.
Yes.
I'm not positive, but I'm positive.
Okay.
So the boiler we're looking at, it's got two big doors on the top. And the left door says Wanakeen and the right door says Type C.
Yep.
And I went and found this news article from the Kiwanee Voice about a Kiwanee boiler, which you'll notice is an anagram.
It sure is.
Wanakeen, but it's got one extra N.
Yeah.
In the version in the game.
That just looks like that thing, huh?
Sure does. Like a lot.
Amazing.
But yeah, I don't know. I just think it's interesting when you can find,
like, actually find the thing.
Inspiration.
Yeah.
Yeah, that these items were modeled after. I would be absolutely floored if this was a coincidence.
It, like, literally says Type C on the other door, too.
It sure does.
That's
it
sure does. Really good. Yeah. Amazing.
So that's my first meaningless tangent. My second, which I guess is actually my first, because it was happening right before this. And I'm going to ask you a couple questions here that you can go ahead and choose not to answer if it makes sense to do so.
Okay.
But is this an alternate timeline of Earth?
No.
And our Earth societies?
Nope.
No. Man, I think that bothers me more than if you would have said yes. Okay. So we'll see if this, how far we go with this. You break out of your cell. You get out of the cell.
Yep.
And the next room up is got a couple of guards in it. And this is your first, like, stealth combat area.
Mm-hmm.
One of those guards is whistling a song.
Hmm.
And he's whistling a sea shanty. What do we do with a drunken sailor?
Yes.
It has the same melody.
Mm-hmm. But it's different words, huh?
As the Earth version. We find out it's different words in a log an hour later.
Uh-huh.
But I spent a bunch of time trying to figure out if this was supposed to be an alternate history, or if it's not, then why is that melody the same?
I mean, just because it's fun.
It's not hard to write a sea shanty melody.
Wow.
He could have whistled anything.
Wow. They're French, you know? You gotta give it to them,
so
the
it's,
French.
It's real... So then I started, you know, looking at that song.
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay.
And then, like, the music stuff started happening. So if you want to go on a music tangent, I'm a little prepared for it. That sea shanty let me open my other document here. That sea shanty is written in the Dorian mode.
All right. What does that mean?
How much do you know about modes and scales?
Besides the scale, like a typical scale, like a music scale?
Yeah.
I know that.
A music scale.
Yeah.
Okay. So you know that word.
At least. I know what that means.
I'm going to probably get some of this wrong. So I apologize to any music majors who may be listening. Because modes are, this isn't where you start with music theory. Also, we could do a lot with music theory. I have thoughts. So music theory is just a way to describe music. We tend to think of it as the correct way to describe music, which is a bunch of dumb bullshit.
Okay.
It is a language that you can use to describe music. It is neither correct nor incorrect. It is a descriptive tool and nothing more.
Okay.
And it is very much based off of a bunch of dead old white European dudes.
Classic.
And has some noticeable strains of white supremacy running throughout it, even to the modern day. Check out Adam Neely's video on white supremacy and music theory if you are interested. It is quite interesting. But, so a scale. It's just a series of notes. If you look at a piano, can picture a piano keyboard in your head.
Yep.
You got the white keys and you got the black keys.
Mm-hmm.
And as you move to adjacent keys, white, black, white, black, white, black, white, black, white, white, you're moving up a half tone of a note.
Okay.
So you're going from like an A to an A sharp.
Mm-hmm.
And then from an A sharp. Yeah. So a major or a minor scale that we typically use does, let's see, that would be the Ionian. So that would be a whole step, half, whole, half is the way those intervals work.
Okay.
So no matter where you start on the keyboard, if you move two keys, one key, two, 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 one, you've played a major scale.
Okay.
And depending on what note you start with determines what the scale is.
I see. Okay.
So we typically, especially in like pop music, usually just talk about major and minor scales. And really, that is the Ionian and Aeolian modes. Modes of music are another way to describe things. That's rooted back in ancient Greece. A lot of this stuff is real old. And then from ancient Greece, those ideas get kind of bastardized by the Byzantines and switched around a little bit. And then the Catholics screw it up even more. And then we slap another layer of nonsense on it to get to modern day. And all of those ideas, even though we use the same words, all mean different things.
Cool.
All of those, like notes aren't real. Music's not real. None of this is real. We made it all up. the note A,
mm-hmm.
we typically think of now as happening at 440 hertz.
Okay.
Which was not always the case. Older, if we go back a couple hundred years, tunings were just slightly different than they are now. So even if you take a sheet of note music from, 200 years ago
mm-hmm.
and play it on a modern instrument, it's going to sound different than had it been played then.
Huh.
Because all of our instruments are tuned slightly differently. And live orchestras typically tune a little sharp. There was a whole, I'm going off tangents on my tangents.
Perfect.
I don't have notes for any of
this. This is what the episode is.
Like there was a whole kind of, like the loudness wars, is that what they're called? In the 90s, when albums just kept getting louder and louder. Are you familiar with this?
No.
This will be a different tangent. There's like kind of a cyclical nature to record producers making shit unnecessarily loud.
Oh, okay.
And the one of the more recent waves was the 90s, but you kind of get into these weird musical arms races with, I was going to say neighboring orchestras at the time. Obviously, it doesn't apply to the 90s. That was just other record producers.
Sure.
That were making shit louder and louder. And when you do that, you lose dynamic range. Eventually, everything's just loud.
Right.
And there's only so loud that you can be. But orchestras were like tuning sharper and sharper at the time because it provides a little more energy to the music. So you end up in these weird cycles of music shifting in ways, even though on paper it's all the same.
Okay.
But we're talking about the Dorian mode because yes. it's slightly different. So you're a D major scale, D, E, F sharp, G, A, B, C sharp.
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be like D Ionian. D Dorian, which is what Drunken Sailor is written in,
mm-hmm.
is just all of the white keys on the piano. If you start at D, D, E, F, G, A, B, C.
That's my kind of piano
playing. No sharps,
playing.
No flats, none of that shit.
Yep, perfect.
Yep.
That's as yep, well as I play works. Piano.
Yeah, that one's whole step, half, whole, half, whole.
Okay.
So slightly different than the major. And it provides like different kind of vibe.
Yeah.
And a song that you may know that is written in Dorian is the Halo theme.
Interesting. Okay.
So Dorian was big in like Gregorian chants. A lot of those are Dorian.
Huh.
And then you see that get pulled from to make Halo chants.
That's really funny. Okay.
And all of these modes started to see more use starting in like the 60s, I guess, 50s and 60s.
Okay.
With the rise of pop music.
Sure.
But before that, it's just major and minor scales from like Bach to the Beatles.
Yeah.
Basically. We're just using two modes.
Huh.
And now we're back up to seven. So there's your random music tangent for the day, I guess.
That's amazing. Okay.
And I'm still mad that they didn't change that melody though.
Yeah, I mean, they changed all the words, but they didn't change the melody.
They changed some of the words from drunken to wailing. And that was the biggest chunk of them.
There is other stuff about rats in there, I believe.
I guess I skimmed it. Oh yeah. Yeah, you're right.
But yes. It is not that different. Rusty Razor instead of Rusty Cleaver, you know.
Okay. Yeah.
We don't say these things enough, but stick him in a scupper with a hose pipe bottom is quite the phrase, and I don't know what any of those words mean, but it sounds menacing.
Scupper's a boat thing. I do know that.
Drainage but I opening. Can't
tell you. Oh, okay. I'm thinking of a different thing.
Opening cut through the bulwark of a ship that water falling on deck may flow overboard. Okay. Yeah, that okay. Yeah.
Never mind. Okay. It's a boat thing. All right.
Yeah, it's a boat thing. It makes sense.
I wasn't gonna get you any more specific than
that. It's a boat thing. Wow. Okay.
So there's two of my three. My third is in this area also, if I'm being honest.
In the prison?
Yeah.
Okay. Is it related to the note about how to be an overseer? Did you find this?
No. I found both copies of that. Some of these notes are in there twice,
mm-hmm.
which is I also found odd, because some of them are like supposed to be journal entries.
Yes. Yeah. Need to hunt it down. But it's very Spartan,
think I
if I recall.
That one.
Yeah, all of my...
The Trials of Aptitude?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I have that up. Excerpt from a book on the esoteric practices of the Abbey. Yeah, okay, so yeah, this is what I'm saying. Like, this society that does this is not the society that this empress is in charge of.
Correct, yeah.
And this is clearly an older practice than the 6 months we've been captured.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This,
like, this is clearly culturally significant and quite old.
Yes.
So this to me is giving Spartan vibes.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least 300 vibes, if more than anything else.
it is much more 300, I think, but yes.
Like, and this is my third tangent is related to this, actually, because I'm a little confused with our, like, we're mixing a lot of fascist iconography.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this piece, we have all of the Nazi visual vibes all over the place.
The and then we have prison walls. Sign is the one that really is the most like, do you get it yet?
Was there an Arbeck McFry in here somewhere?
There is a sign in heavily German script that says order shall prevail.
Yeah.
In the middle of the prison. Of
that somewhere.
Yeah.
I remember that. Oh, yeah. I did take a screenshot of that. And yeah, that script is very Nazi.
Yep.
Here's these banners just outside the interrogation room. This place has an interrogation room.
That's not great.
Here's the banners that are not shy at all.
Yes. So banners are the banner of Lord Regent Burroughs. So those are of the Spymaster, but... You are correct.
Okay.
This prison obviously is from before that happens. So. Yeah.
And the vibes are bad here.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So here's a couple more shots of just the prison area. But this goes through the entire prison. Looks like this.
Yep.
This is my third point and my next chunk in the mixing visual metaphors.
Mm-hmm.
Is we have our classic, like, half to one third green wall with white on top, which to me, from a video game standpoint, I first encountered in GoldenEye.
Really?
64.
Okay.
In the archives, you end up in a former Soviet facility. So I've always associated this color scheme with the Soviets.
That's really funny.
Which is different than our other visual metaphors here. Not entirely.
Yeah.
So I looked into that a little bit. I'm less confident in this information because this was mostly forum posts, so take it as folklore and not true.
Sure.
But it sounds like this scheme is common in former Soviet satellites, parts of China. I saw some people mention parts of India also use this. And I've never looked into why. So I did what I could in a short period of time. Do you have any idea, I guess? Is this a thing you've ever been curious about?
So I've seen it in, like, period depictions of British prisons, for the most part, around late 1800s, early 1900s. I'm actually looking at a BBC article right now that shows pictures of a prison in 1908. And it is a prison where suffragettes were held. So that's fun.
Cool.
But yeah, I had the same kind of dark green on the bottom and then a like lime wash white on top. But no, I have no idea why you would do that. I assume for cleanliness or not so showing things.
Yeah, that's what I read. Was that, and again, no idea if this is true. It makes some amount of sense to me, though. Mm-hmm. Is that typically this is coming from like army surplus or just army in general. Like those guys have a lot of green paint laying around and are willing to make more of
that
it.
Makes sense.
And you use an oil-based paint because it is easier to clean as a surface than a lime wash wall would be or a water-based paint would be.
Okay.
And you do that bottom chunk because that's where the people are.
Yep.
And that's where they're going to fuck up the wall. And they're less likely to fuck up the wall on top. So you're saving on paint, and then the room's not as dark because it's not all grim green.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I just sent you one of the images of
Pentonville,
I believe, is what the prison is called.
Look at that. Yeah.
Victorian era prisons.
It is a vibe.
It,
the green and white.
Yeah. It's funny too, because like from a very modern interior design aspect, this is obviously incredibly shoddily done inside these prisons, but there is like an ongoing interior design trend of two-tone walls with high chair rails like that. So it's also very funny to look at this as like prison decor and military surplus. Yeah. And this is a thing that is like a current trend in American, you know, like American DIY home stuff is doing this almost exact thing, except I guess it's not on concrete walls.
Yeah, very, very wainscoting.
Yes.
But only paint.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought you were going to call out all of the wall text here. What's your feeling on all the wall text?
Do you want to narrow me down slightly? Like all of the...
Just that there is like... any. You will very quickly start to realize how much it repeats itself. And it is very... Like, it is good wall text. I find it interesting. But it has the very silly, to me at least, the very silly Left 4 Dead feeling where it's like no one would write this. Like, why did someone write this in cursive? Oh, like, what's happening here?
Yeah, there was a bunch of that in the sewers.
Yes.
A lot of don't dead open inside sort of stuff. This might have been out of the sewers, the red X's by doorways.
Where was that?
I assume this is marking like plague houses.
Correct.
But I think that might have been in...
That might have been the next part.
We're going to dub episode 2.
Yeah, I think that's once you get to the Hound's Pit. But yeah, you will see more of that.
That's very biblical to me mm-hmm. in terms of we're marking. Yeah. Yeah, we're clearly drawing from a lot of places for the world building here.
Yeah.
A fair number of disparate sources.
Yeah, it's interesting because the second game takes place on one of the other islands, and that is a Karnaka, is what it's called. And that is very much a, like, northern Africa or, like, a very specific part of Italy kind of vibe to it. So it's interesting seeing this being the country is called Gristle, which kind of threw me for a while there, that Dunwall is just a city within Gristle.
Mm-hmm.
Because they reference it, and I don't think they ever show you a map until later of what this actual world looks like, but it's very Victorian steampunk England with like almost turn of the century. Like, it's getting very close to the 1900s, it feels, especially with the really cool-looking boats.
Is that other continent the one that they're alluding to as, like, an unspoiled land ripe for colonization?
No.
Yet difficult to maintain? Okay.
That is the Paradisian continent, I think? I think that's what... Pandisian is what it's called. Yeah, so the...
Is this an... Africa or an America allegory?
I imagine it is an American allegory, but it is hard to tell. And you you learn very little about the Pandesian continent throughout all of these games, actually. I think that there are, like, mentions of it, and some of the people have, like, gone there or have heard of people who have gone there, but most people who return have a real bad time.
Yeah.
But there are people there, as far as we know, I think. Maybe that's a later revelation, but...
Riffling through my notes here. We've hit most of them. The coins are minted by the Lord Regent,
mm-hmm.
which I found interesting.
Yep.
As a
new currency
arrangement. But is that during that 6 month period?
Yeah.
Or prior?
I imagine it's the 6 month
during the
period.
Six?
Yeah.
Okay. No paper money so far. A lot of coin. A
lot of coin. I think it's only coin. It will also convert things to coin. So
that's what I was about to ask, is how do you feel about the, like, the junk stuff that you pick up that you would sell to a shopkeeper,
mm-hmm.
you pick up and it is immediately turned into coins in your inventory? How do we feel about that as a mechanic?
I generally like it. I think they get rid of it in the second one, though. And I think a part of that is just there is very little shop stuff that happens in the first game.
Yeah, I've noticed that. And I guess I have yet to decide how I feel about it.
Okay.
On the one hand, I'm like, okay, if it's just coins anyway, then why am I not just picking up coins?
Yeah.
And if I am picking up these things and they're just immediately coins, then mm-hmm. they justify themselves from a world building standpoint. I guess it was one of the things that, like, slapped me in the face as a video game ass video game happening.
Yeah.
Where I was like, oh, cool. Here's some ore that I've never heard of. I bet this will be useful.
It's
and
not.
You pick it up and it's like, you got 20 coins. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, you had, like, this feels like you had ambitions to do shop things, and then that shit got cut sometime before this game released, and this was an easy way to not have to go take all those items out.
Yeah, I think the Piero mentions each one of the three things that you pick up in the first level or around the Hound's Pit as like items that he needs in a letter, and you just like pick each one of them up around that location and they just turn into magical money. It's like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, he mentions, like, we'll do black market stuff, and then you find a note on his desk from the Admiral.
Yeah. It says, like, you can't get this stuff.
It's a response. Yeah, it's a response to Pierre trying to put in a purchase order and his boss telling him that the budget has run dry,
yep.
and he's only getting the most bare minimum shit possible.
Yes. But then you just find it in the house, or you... I found some of those, the, like, crushed minerals or whatever in the sewers
minerals,
before then.
Feathers.
What's the ore called?
Which one of them?
Tivian ore, right?
Yeah, that right? Okay, that sounds right. I knew it was a T, and my brain would only do Tevinter, and I knew that was the wrong game.
That is the wrong game. I don't know if we're going to cover that one.
My next note after the coins was just, those dudes got fucking munched.
Oh, yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's the first rat.
Sure is.
That was real silly.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it was supposed to be horrifying or silly, but it was... pretty silly.
I think it was mostly just supposed to be a tutorial more than anything else, but it is really absurd when they're like losing their minds and they're just slowly being ragdolled by a couple of mice.
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot of mice. So like the first one's almost like a cutscene, like it's a real scripted event.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they get turned into skelly boys pretty quick. And that was another moment where I was like, if this is the way the world works right now, people would be behaving differently. Like,
mm-hmm.
I feel like you'd see some thick leather shin guards and some more stomping going on or something. I don't know. If there were bands of rats that could strip a man to the bone in 12 seconds, I would have different footwear tomorrow.
Yes. Yeah.
At a minimum.
Yeah. I don't know how much they get into that stuff. I mean, there are, we'll talk about the rats lots.
Okay.
We'll leave it at that. There is a lot to the rats. There's a lot going on there, and there's a lot more that can go on there depending on what you do, which is interesting. But yes.
Why, What? Why the 6 months? Why are you alive? Why do these dudes not just kill you and kill that kid?
This is a fantastic question.
That doesn't make any damn sense to me. And then after you're captured, we get a real Mr. Bond moment where they're just like, let me tell you our entire plan mm-hmm. real quick.
Yeah.
This surely will come back to bite uh-huh. us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. It's very interesting. Like, I understand the impulse of like, oh, shit, this guy showed up 2 days early. I guess we're still going to kill the Empress. And then, oh, look, let's frame this guy. But then the whole idea of waiting 6 months is the most contrived. Well, we need to make a video game and we need to make sure there's Nazi banners everywhere while you're going around this world and that it sucks. But yeah, I don't know why.
Yeah.
Also, well, like, why do you need him to sign? Like, he is an official of the court. Like, you could just have someone forge his signature and that's it. You could have killed him day three.
No one's doing forensics on this.
Yep.
They don't need any of that.
Yep.
I did like the scrawled text on the jail cells. Did you read any of those?
Some of them, yes. I think you actually sent a screenshot of one of them.
I probably did, yeah. So the one in your cell that I like is a little fire that warms is better than a big fire that burns.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first thing that that's the first thing I zeroed in on, at least after the interrogation cutscene.
Yep.
So just before this, you are burned with a hot poker.
Yep.
And then you wake up to that quote, which is kind of fun.
It's good.
We all start with innocence, but the world leads us to guilt. I have that written down.
That's a good one.
Do we learn who the Boyle family is?
Does
that mean anything to you?
Like, do we learn in the future or do we learn it in this segment?
I guess I didn't learn it in this segment, I don't think.
I don't think we do. We will learn more about the Boyle family.
Interesting. Okay. So we wake up in cell B5, and the man in cell B4 talks about being in there because the Boyle family has accused him of stealing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I didn't know if that would end up being relevant or not, and whether or not him being in cell B4 was a nod to something that had happened before.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of nods... Did you, mm-hmm. we're hopping all around now, but did you open the safe in the sewers?
I did not.
Okay.
I wasn't sure if that was going to be in the room I had just passed, mm-hmm. or if the combination was going to be in the next room.
This fucked me too.
By the time I realized I had missed it, I wasn't willing to backtrack for it, if I'm being honest, because they had not proven to me that money was going to be useful yet.
You could not backtrack. Once you go through the thing, you'd have to reload a save to get there.
Okay.
The only reason I mention it, there is a bunch of money in there, I think, which will become more useful as you go, obviously. As you noticed at the end of that level, they give you a level end screen that has a bunch of stats on it. And we will talk about some of those in a second. But the important nod is, I'm sure that you are aware of this, but you probably could have just guessed what that safe combination is, because
it doesn't let you.
Oh, it doesn't? Oh, you have to find it?
No, if you hit a button, it says you have to know the combination to open it. And that's why I was like, yeah, I'm not gonna.
I guess yep. The solution is directly behind the safe. You just have to move the bottles out of the way to see what the numbers are.
Ah, okay.
Which I had to look up because I did not see it.
Yeah, there's bottles everywhere. They mentioned that it would be tied to whiskey or something along those lines.
I think the shelf directly behind the safe has a giant whiskey written on it. So that's, I felt like an idiot. But the door code, or the code to the safe, is 0451. Do you know the importance of this number?
No.
This is like up there as one of the tippy top references to Big Daddy Immersive Sim, which is Deus Ex. It is a reference to Fahrenheit 451, and it is the it is the first door code that you open in System Shock, where it first appeared, and then it was in System Shock 2, both developed by Looking Glass, and then it also appears in Deus Ex. Like, this is an immersive sim thing. You are not a real immersive sim.
This is
if you do not have 451 as a door code.
This is the immersive sim Wilhelm screen.
Yes, it is. I was recently playing Prey 2017 because that is one of my favorite video games of all time. And you guessed it, one of the codes is 0451 incredibly early in that game. It is everywhere.
Yeah, that's fun.
It's good stuff. It says, hey, we're smart dystopian people who care about the necessity of reading forbidden knowledge and saving those around us, I guess. And then it never ends the way you want it to, also, is, I guess, a nod to what's happening here. Do you wanna I guess talk about any other stuff here, or would you like to talk about some of the stuff in that mission end screen?
I have two more notes, I guess.
Hit me.
One, do we learn what the Morley insurrection is?
I think it is.
I believe that's an island.
Yes, Morley is an island. This jumped out to me also. I don't think we learn a ton more about it. Yeah, I don't think we learn much about it, and there's just general reference to it.
And then my last bit is another completely pedantic quibble.
Okay.
Which, there are audio logs.
Yeah, the punch card machines?
That are on punch cards, yeah. First off, all of the punch cards are identical.
They are.
Which bothers
Correct,
me.
Yep.
I checked. And two, punch cards don't have the fidelity required to record audio. I know how punch cards work, and I know how audio recording works, and those aren't the same thing, and they can't be the same thing, because a punch card, let's see, that thing is, it's, I think that's four columns across, and it looks like they have half width and full width punches.
Yes, correct.
So, yeah, you're talking real low bit rate on punch cards. Yeah, that doesn't work, but that's fine. I can let that go.
Unfortunately, this carries on into the second game, I believe. The same machines, but they at least have dictaphone microphones and speakers on them this time.
Okay. I like the vibes. I like the vibes of, like, yeah, check out this desktop punch card thing. Like, I see how they got there, and if I didn't know how either of those worked, I would think it's real neat.
Yeah.
And I still think it's pretty neat, if I'm being honest.
But it is silly.
But it is silly. And it bugs me that all the punch cards are the same. I would have been way happier if there were two punch cards. So I couldn't run between two rooms and verify very easily without screenshots that they were identical.
Yep. Yeah, we will find a second one in the different... I guess I need to double check.
We've gone through a bunch.
If there is fidelity on this, no, there is not. I'm jumping ahead with some images here, but in Dishonored 2, there is obviously, the game came out several years later. Visual fidelity is a little bit better. The machine is called the Audio Log, which is fun. The card has written on it the Audio Graph, which is the card. And then it is the Sokolov audio log. So just further evidence that your Da Vinci connection is probably correct.
Mm.
Most likely this machine was created by Sokolov.
Yeah.
We will get more Sokolov. He continues. He is in...
Yeah, that seemed to be...
Yes. Yeah.
The way of going.
Yes, yeah. So he has a bunch of people who will... like Pietro, and then in the second game there is Jindosh, who is another person who is constantly trying to get one up on this eccentric Da Vinci guy. Okay. Do you want to talk about, is there anything that hopped out at you at the end mission screen, I guess? How did you do?
I don't remember. Kind of shitty.
Yeah, okay.
So I was going full stealth, but like I hadn't figured out the controls yet. Yep. So I fucking stabbed a guy right in the neck that I didn't mean to, and I was like, well, I guess I'm killing dudes now.
Okay.
So then I killed about half of them.
Okay. Do you have a screenshot of your end card?
I do not.
Okay.
I do not.
I almost don't want to talk about it then if you don't have it in front of you, because there is that there, I guess we can talk about some of the stuff here. So there is, there's basically how many people you killed, how many civilians you killed, if anyone, any of those bodies were found, if you didn't, there's like special achievements if you didn't kill anyone and if you weren't ever detected. There is special actions, which are kind of the secondary objectives. I don't remember if there was one in the first, in this first bit. Did you find the beggar area?
No.
Okay. I don't have...
You're like, no?
It was a small thing, but there, it's basically talking about how there's a note there about how the guy left because either the rats were going to eat him down here or the people above were going to get it because he has the plague. So, you know, just real...
Oh, maybe I did.
Real dire.
Maybe I did catch that. Oh, overall chaos. That was a thing I remember.
Yeah, okay. So this is the thing I was going to ask you about. Do you know what your overall chaos was?
High, if I recall correctly.
Okay. This is a video game. The video game is tracking it, and it is telling you that it is tracking it. What do you think chaos means in this instance?
I don't have a clue.
Okay.
I mean, the way it's laid out is that it's like some kind of a summary statistic of the other bits going on that screen.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just me interpreting UI.
Okay. Okay.
And nothing else.
Okay. We will probably return to the idea of chaos in this game. It's an interesting system that I'm trying to remember if they even mention it in the many of the screens that they pop up as tutorials, but there's some interesting stuff going on with how this game is working, the clockwork, like, if you will, underneath the surface, that I think is, I remember it being kind of spoiled when it popped up with one of the tutorial messages, but I don't know where it says it and how prominent it was if you had just maybe skipped past it. But if you don't know what it means,
I would believe either.
I'm not going to tell you.
All right.
It's fun. It's a cool thing. I don't remember how important it is, like as the game progresses, but I do remember it has an impact, and that's kind of the best part, is watching that system kind of work itself out.
Is that a running total or a per mission? Because I remember it said like current total or something along those lines.
I'll tell you this. It is a running total.
Okay. That's why. I mean, I assume this is determining what end screen you're going to get.
Generally.
To some degree.
To some degree. It's more than that, but yes.
Yeah.
The thing that I... let's see. End screen. I just want to make sure I get the language here right of what it says on the actual screen. Overall chaos, current total is at least what I am seeing here.
Okay.
So that is overall for your game, what level of chaos you have.
Yep. And current total tells me it's a summary statistic of some kind.
Yep. 'Cause I don't think they ever show the play your way, card. These games, each of them have a little play your way tutorial pop-up that shows up.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, hey, did you know you could go through that window, you could murder everyone where they are, or you could try to find a vent or find a key card. And I don't know if this first game has it or not, but we'll talk about chaos as it comes up, because I think it is a cool system. Yeah. And I think depending on how you play, if you continue the high chaos route that you are going, We'll have some fun stuff to talk about.
I mean, that feels likely.
I love that. All right. I think that is... Do you have any final thoughts about this original segment of Dishonored?
Have I missed anything? All the fake advertisements are real cool.
Hell yeah.
I'm on board with all those.
Yep.
They repeat a little more often than I'd like, but that's an economic issue more than a world building one, I would assume.
Yes.
But they seem real neat. Yeah, no, it seems fine. It controls well enough.
Yes.
For a 14-year-old thing, it's not bothering me.
Okay.
Really in any way. And the things that bothered me most were probably the objective markers that I was able to turn off.
Okay.
So there's a lot of options that you can switch off in the UI. Everything seems like it's on max by default.
Yeah.
But a lot of things you can turn off. So
yeah, and I think that's the way to go.
I'm on board.
Nice. Okay. Cool.
I'm on board so far.
I think the next episode will be fun to talk about The Outsider. And then I think as we get into the missions, there's a lot more focus. Like the idea is here is a play space to go murder this person. And it's basically an important...
It's a little more Hitman-y, right?
Yes, yeah. And it's much more important and like telling you about the faction that they're part of, why they're doing what they're doing, who they are, what they believe. And it gives us a really good, fresh picture of this world. I'm sure that you saw this in the save screen, but our first person we are attacking is the High Overseer of the Trials of Aptitude Fame. So we will learn more about the Overseers.
Okay. All right.
And then it will continue to go that way. There is a hit list, and we will be hitting that list, and they will tell us all about high society and the worst people in this country.
Do we get a whole deck of cards to work through here?
It's not that crazy,
the vibe?
But basically, we're taking out all of the aces, I think, is the play here.
Okay. Okay.
So yeah, that is episode one, I guess, of our walk through of Dishonored. Also, Music Theory. I'm sure that will come up more as we kind of get into this. there's going to be a lot of fun stuff, I think. We've talked about whales. We have not talked about the whale oil process, which I think is coming up in the second episode here.
There's a little bit more in the next episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just...
Are we going to, like, pull into Moby Dick or Old Man of the Sea or something?
We might.
How many books about whale oil are we going to
read? I don't know. I mean, we're going
to... I've read zero whale oil
books. I have also read zero whale oil books, I think. But that doesn't mean I'm not willing to do it, you know?
Yeah.
We're at least going to talk about Scrimshaw. I feel
like we're in prime, like, whale oil dabbling age. Yeah. Like, we've both reached... Like, we have to get into cars or ships soon.
Yep.
And I'm leaning real, real hard towards ships.
I mean, shipping a bottle seems like fun if you really think about it.
Yeah.
Can I?
It sure does. Ooh,
can I 3D print one of the Dishonored ships? That is one of my favorite designs. Here's the thing. I will say this up front. I guess not up front. I will say this at the end. Jesus. The thing about Dishonored that I love so much, and the play space of the game is fun. I like the powers. I like the world as it is, like the outsider and the...
They don't know about the powers yet.
I know they don't know about the powers. We'll get there.
Okay.
If you've seen anything about this game, you know that there are powers. But yeah.
Yeah, there's powers. They fixed the jump. That was my other big complaint chunk. I was like, man, this jump needs to be just a little bit higher. And it's like, hey, here's a better jump, and also you can upgrade your current jump too.
Yep.
Like, okay.
And also you can see vision cones. Like that the two stealth things that I need.
Yeah.
Better jump and vision cones. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
But the thing about these games that continues to just be the most impressive thing to me of all time is how fucking beautiful everything is in its grimness. Like, I love the boat that you get on at the end of this mission. It is like the sleekest, most beautiful wooden boat, but it has like the angular lines of a boat that could never exist. And it is so cool. And I love everything about it. And there are things constantly in this game that will just continue to pop up. It's like, that's some really cool looking architecture, man. That chair. I fucking love that chair. And
I've looked at a couple different chairs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I am slightly disappointed in their lamp selection so far. I will lodge that complaint.
There will be more lamps.
Lamp weirdo. Yep.
Don't you worry.
Dazor would have worked great for some of this. And they have our green glass.
Yes, there's a lot of that.
Green glass and gold. Yeah.
I will have to dig it up for the show notes because it is not saved in this instance of Firefox that I have open. But there is an entire Flickr account, I think, that is just over 1,000 screenshots, like still life screenshots of Dishonored and the like incredibly beautiful environments that they've built in these games. If you want to go cruising for some lamps, you can find some in there. There are some like unreal, incredibly beautiful looking, run down turn of the century housing projects that I just absolutely love. I love everything about how this game looks. So I will continue to fawn over the construction methods and the weird, like anachronistic ability to bend large panels of wood that was not invented until the mid 40s when we had to build airplanes. But it's cool. I love it.
Yeah, the art design's real neat. This is the first old game, old now, relative, I suppose, that I've played in a while where I'm like, yeah, I'd do a remaster of this. This could use some better visual fidelity, and it would actually gain something from it.
Yeah. I'm curious to go back to Dishonored 2, because from my memory, that game is stunning. And I imagine that it has held up pretty well, because Prey 2017 still looks good, too. Oh, yeah, it came out in 2016. That probably looks fine. But yeah.
I want to know more about this chair I just sent you.
Ooh, a chair.
I don't recognize it off the top of my head, but that the cutout on the back piece is too intentional for this not to be modeled after something.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's what this show is going to end up turning into, is hunting down the weird reference artifacts that they use for all of this stuff.
Yeah,
I'm down. Like it seems very silly to me that the pistol that you use is like a modified wheel lock. It's not even a flint lock. It's a wheel lock, which is older.
Yeah.
It's just cool.
Yeah.
Commitment to the bit, you know?
I'm going to figure out this chair. There's a chair. I have a chair in my head, and I can't remember the name of it. And I'm wondering if it's the same one. And it's going to take me until next episode to figure out if it is.
Well, we will.
But maybe, yeah. Stay tuned for my progress on my chair hunt.
The true game of this is the I Spy game that you play.
Yeah.
Ugh. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it. We thought this was going to be a short one, and jokes on us, it wasn't. I think I don't have the outro of the show anymore. So stay tuned, and we're going to keep playing through Dishonored and bring up whatever weird tangents we come along with. If you like this, let us know. You can join the Discord, do all of that nonsense, and come hang out and play along with us if you would like. This game was on stupid sale within the last couple weeks, and with the going rate of how Microsoft and Xbox is functioning as a company, I would suspect there's going to be a fire sale constantly on these Arcane properties. So jump on the train and enjoy one of the best modern immersive sims you can find these days. Any final thoughts, Logan?
The chair I was thinking of was an Emeco 1006, and it's entirely different.
Yeah, so the Emeco has the three things and the three vertical ones, right?
Yeah.
Well, we'll talk about the Emeco 1006 is it was created for the Navy, and that's a whole other podcast. So we'll
well, that's why I was like, I remember there being a significant boat chair.
Yep. This would be that significant boat chair.
But it's not. It is not.
It's not.
Yeah.
It looks more like a, it's probably.
It looks more like it belongs with my lamp than.
Yeah.
Than it does.
I would need to see the legs, but it is more in line with a, I believe it is a reply chair is the name. And that would be designed by, you can buy them from Hay, H-A-Y. Nope, these are also not showing the wrong ones. Designed by Wim, W-I-M, Rietveld. Rietveld? Rietveld. Yeah. It's got now we've like truly lost it and gone to...
Now we're doing
ChairCast.
Thank you for tuning into ChairCast.
Hey, thanks for listening. I've been Phil, and he's been Logan. Our music is by Nicholas Cahill.
Head over to 70%complete.com for articles, blogs, and reviews. And you can also watch our video essays and Let's Plays on YouTube. Or, you know, tune in mostly daily for my short chat podcast, Point to Point. There's also a link to join our Discord down there. Come hang out and chat RuneScape, tech, or, you know, really anything else with all the great people there. All the links are in the show notes. And we'll be back soon with another episode of Esoteric Nonsense. See you then.